Now, the man behind the voice you've been hearing for decades associated with Valley sports teams. It's time for That's So Money with Arizona Diamondbacks and ASU broadcaster Jeff Munn.
Well, hi there, and welcome to the latest installment of That's So Money, the podcast that should be done more frequently and for reasons that are too lengthy to go into. It isn't always as much as I would like. I'm Jeff Munn. And I got to admit that one of the reasons that I've had trouble cranking out a podcast lately is because I've been kind of running dry on material. I miss my opportunity to give my thoughts on the bowl season and all the playoff games, because it's about to hit February. And as I'm taping this, the Pro Bowl is going on over in Glendale, but I saw something and I got my inspiration from this podcast, and you'll never believe where I got it from. It was the news that hit this past week that Bill Johnson's Big Apple restaurant is going to close and go away. I'm very sad to hear this news because it's another piece of my childhood that no longer exists, and thus the inspiration. This is a very big week in Phoenix, with the Super Bowl, the Pro Bowl, the Phoenix Open going on, the Barrett-Jackson Auto Auction. And there was an article today in the Republic about how far we've come as a city in terms of sports, and it's true. The closing of Bill Johnson's Big Apple restaurant has no link to that whatsoever, but it does remind natives like myself that the Phoenix we grew up with has given way to a much bigger, a much more cosmopolitan city than the one we grew up in. And for many of you who listen to this podcast, you don't remember that Phoenix. So many people, and we say it so often, have moved to this community from other places around the country, and you have very little understanding or memory of what Phoenix used to be like. So I thought we'd use this podcast not for just some old guy to just stand here or sit here and wax poetic about the way things used to be, but all of you are familiar with the Phoenix you experience now. The NFL, Major League Baseball, the NBA, the National Hockey League, major golf, tennis, auto racing events, spring training. Well, for some of us, there was another Phoenix sports-wise a long time ago. So, okay, let me use this podcast today to not just, I'm not trying to chide you that you don't remember the past because you didn't live here. But I did want to share some recollections with you about the Phoenix I grew up in terms of sports and what it meant to be a sports fan back in the 1960s and 70s. For openers, pro football in Phoenix existed way before the Cardinals or even the USFL Arizona Wranglers, and I could do a whole bunch of stuff on that alone. But pro football in Phoenix actually, for me, began with a team called the Phoenix Blazers, and they were kind of a hot item at the time. They came into existence in the 70s off the heels of Arizona State's first big national success in college football, and in fact, the Blazers were quarterbacked by the guy who quarterbacked ASU onto the national stage, Joe Spagnuolo. They played their games at several venues, Montgomery Stadium at Phoenix Union High School, Hoy Field at Phoenix College, and for a time at the fairgrounds. Have you ever been to the state fairgrounds for the state fair? You know where they have the demolition derby? Well, that was a football stadium at one time, and that's where the Phoenix Blazers played. And they played in the old Western States Football League, or Western Football League, against teams like the Orange County Rhinos. It was a mild success, but the league itself that the Blazers played in never really got off the ground. And so it didn't last very long, but it was still a cherished part of the Phoenix community at the time, because in the 1970s, it was very difficult for anybody to envision the NFL ever coming here. Yeah, there were attempts to get expansion teams. In fact, the latest edition of Phoenix Magazine talks about efforts in the 1970s for Phoenix to be in the mix for an expansion team, expansion teams that eventually went to, ironically, Seattle and Tampa Bay. But at the time, it seemed very far-fetched and something that may happen way down the road. And, of course, it did in the late 1980s with the arrival of the Cardinals from St. Louis. Of course, basketball meant the Suns. They were the first major pro sports team to arrive in Phoenix in 1968. The NBA was really smart to go to a lot of these markets before anybody else. Phoenix, Portland. I mean, look at the success of the Blazers. And a lot of it is just due to the fact that the NBA was the first to get there. And with the Suns, of course, it meant playing at Veterans Memorial Coliseum. And I remember in particular that they would do things back then to drum up fan support, including making appearances at JCPenney stores. JCPenney was a sponsor of the Suns. And the first Suns player I ever met was George Wilson, one of their centers from their expansion year. And I met him at a JCPenney store at Christown Mall, shook hands with him. And I had a chance during the 25th anniversary season to emcee an event that George Wilson was at, and I shook hands with him again and told him that I never forgot that. I'm sure he had, and I wouldn't blame him for forgetting. But the Suns, it was a totally different deal back in those days. Their first voice of the Suns was Bob Bache, who was the nightly sports anchor at Channel 12. In fact, his sports segment on TV was called Sports Today with Bob Bache. Where was Al McCoy? Al was doing radio play-by-play of the Phoenix Roadrunners, the minor league hockey team in town. That's right. Al McCoy was a hockey announcer. And before that was the ASU announcer. And before that was the Phoenix Giants announcer. That's the whole reason Al came to Phoenix back in the late 1950s. So Al did a little of everything before he did the Suns. And I remember hearing him do Roadrunner hockey games. And he was terrific as a hockey announcer. And great memories of that. And then, of course, in 1972, he moved on to the Suns. Now, hockey, and again, here's another sport that has deeper roots than some people may realize. When I was in high school, I had a friend who had season tickets to the old Western League Roadrunners, and we went to a ton of games at the Coliseum. And he had great seats, too, right behind one of the goals up against the glass. Or in the early days in the Western League, it wasn't glass, it was wire. And you never worried about the puck flying through and breaking the wire. You worried about the glass a little bit. But boy, it was great because with that wire, you could feel the chill of the ice coming through and hitting you. And you could feel the players crashing up against the boards. And it was very well received at the Coliseum. You may be surprised to know that at the Coliseum, the first sports tenant was the Roadrunners. It wasn't the Suns. And the building was built not only to host all the many events at the fair, but it was designed to be a hockey venue first and foremost. And a lot of people to this day think that the Coliseum would have been a perfect place to put an NHL team. Of course, it'd have to be big time refurbished now because it only seats about 12,000 for most events with no suites. But in its time, boy, it was a great place to watch a hockey game because there were no obstructed views. They had the center-hung scoreboard, but it wasn't very big, and it didn't get in people's way. And hockey was several incarnations of the Roadrunners, the Western League, then the move to the World Hockey Association. I remember the first year of the Roadrunners in the WHA, they were pretty good, and they made the playoffs. In fact, they made the playoffs their first 2 years. First year, they lost in the first round to Quebec. Well, can you imagine that road trip, Phoenix to Quebec? And then in the second year they were in the WHA, they lost to the San Diego Mariners. And it was quite a rivalry between those two teams, the Roadrunners and Mariners. And then after the franchise folded in the WHA, they were reborn very quickly in the Central Hockey League and then into the Pacific Hockey League. And then went away for a while before the International Hockey League Roadrunners showed up. So hockey had been going on in Phoenix for quite a while before the Coyotes arrived. Baseball, of course, was the Pacific Coast League Phoenix Giants, later to become the Firebirds, playing out at Phoenix Municipal Stadium. And I'll tell you that anybody to this day that wonders why it is so important to have a roof at Chase Field never had to sit at a game at Phoenix Municipal Stadium. That stadium simply just could not make people comfortable no matter how much the Giants and the Firebirds tried. And attendance was never really all that great for the Coast League. And a big part of it was just the fact that it was just so darn uncomfortable, even at night in the middle of summer. But there were some hardy souls that went out to some baseball games at Phoenix Municipal Stadium. And for a kid like me, it was always a treat to go to a Coast League game. Cactus League baseball was a handful of teams when I was a kid. The Giants played at Phoenix Muni for quite a while, never really sold out a lot of their games. In fact, Cactus League in those days, you could just walk up and buy a ticket right up at game time. The only time the Giants would sell out a game is when they would play the Dodgers. The Dodgers weren't training in Arizona at the time, but they would always stop off and play the Giants in an exhibition on their way back from Vero Beach. And because the Dodger games were on radio here, everybody wanted to come out and see the Dodgers. It was ironic, the Giants trained here, their AAA team was here, but nobody in town really seemed that interested in the Giants because it was a Dodger town and we all grew up listening to Vin Scully. Of course, baseball also meant the colleges. Arizona State, great program. And when they opened Packard Stadium, it really was the state of the art at the time. And that's part of why it really hurts me to see Packard Stadium close, although I know it has to, and I'm excited for the return to Phoenix Municipal Stadium. And speaking of colleges, you might be surprised to know that when Arizona State opened their current home, it was called the University Activity Center. And what you might be surprised to learn is that its seating capacity was actually greater than that at the Coliseum. The original University Activity Center sat 14,287 when it opened in 1974. The Coliseum sat just 12,000. And with it being brand spanking new and plastic seats and all the little things that go along with it, the Suns at one point in the late 1980s seriously considered leaving the Coliseum and moving their home games to ASU. Of course, now, Wells Fargo Arena, there's talk about it going away or being greatly refurbished. And I have to admit, it's probably time. That building's been around for 40 years, and it shows its age quite a bit, but it's still very functional. The other thing that was big when I was a kid was ASU track and field. Baldy Castillo ran a championship-level program, in fact, won a national championship in 1977. And not every track and field meet would get a big crowd, but the Sun Angel meet was one of the real highlights on the sports calendar, not just track and field. And especially in Olympic years, when a lot of Olympians would come here to the desert and participate in the Sun Angel meet because it was a great place to get some qualifying times in the light desert air in the springtime. Well, what else do I remember very quickly? Well, obviously, ASU football. And if you had tickets to ASU football games, especially when I was a kid, if there was a kid in my class that had gone to an ASU football game, he was a big shot on campus. The Sun Devil Stadium at the time only sat 50,000 people, and it seemed like it was the toughest ticket in the world to get, and most of the time it was, because of all the success that Frank Cush had with the teams, especially in the early 70s, playing in the WAC, and it was not an uncommon thing for ASU to just bludgeon people on Saturday nights at home. In fact, when they lost a game, it was pretty devastating. And at the time, one of the really cool things about ASU home games was that a lot of the Valley restaurants and resorts sponsored buses to take fans to the games. In fact, the Point restaurant on 16th Street just north of Glendale had a London double-decker bus, and I rode it a couple times, and it was quite an interesting experience in November when the weather started to cool down to ride the top deck of that double-decker bus to an ASU home game. I bring all this up because we are still a relatively new city. I mean, when you compare it to other cities around the country, even in the West, Phoenix is still relatively young. We don't have that many things you call traditions. Oh, the Phoenix Open, the golf tournament, used to be played at the Phoenix Country Club over at 7th Street and Thomas. Can you imagine that? Well, part of the reason they had to move the tournament is because the pro golfers were just destroying that course. Scores in the low 60s were very common because they had just got to a point where they were dominating that course. And to their credit, the PGA came up with the idea to build the TPC of Scottsdale, and it's been an unrivaled success. In fact, prior to the building of the TPC, there weren't that many great championship level courses that I recall. Most of the really great courses in town have been built in the last 20 years, or 25 if you count the Karsten Golf Course at ASU. Boy, I could just go on and on and on. But the biggest thing is the closing of Bill Johnson's Big Apple restaurant was just as kind of a nudge to me that we're letting go of our past. And that's not a bad thing. I mean, lots of cities do that. But it's really sad that so many people who live in Phoenix don't know what its history is. And for those of us, and we're still in the minority, natives who grew up in this city, boy, there are some tremendous memories. And again, I could just go on and on. The Wallace and Ladmo drive-in, the Wallace and Ladmo TV show on Channel 5, the different fireworks shows on the 4th of July, just a lot of little things that I remember as a kid. And especially in terms of sports, boy, you could just go on and on and on with all the different things that used to take place in this community. And it, when you do lay them out, it really does show you how much we've changed. Well, I'd like to thank Bill Johnson's Big Apple Restaurant for giving me the inspiration for this podcast. By the way, if you get a chance to get over there and sample their barbecue food and their barbecue sauce before they close, do it, because it really is a good place to eat. They used to have two restaurants down there, Bill Johnson's Big Apple Restaurant, the barbecue place, and a Mexican restaurant down the street called the El Diablo. And one of the reasons I remember the Big Apple so much is because they used to do a nightly radio remote on KTAR every night. Back in the early 70s, KTAR played what they called soft rock, middle-of-the-road music. And a guy, I mean, they had some great disc jockeys on that station. Bill Haywood did mornings, and I've said many times how inspirational Bill was to me in getting me into radio. But they also had one of the funniest guys I ever heard on radio. In fact, the funniest, a guy named Dave Fisher. And I'll bet almost nobody remembers Dave Fisher, but I do. And he and Bill Haywood were two guys that really inspired me to go into this business. So, a few memories. We really try hard to avoid just waxing poetic about memories of when I was younger, but I just got to thinking, especially this week, it's good to walk down memory lane every once in a while. And for all of you to realize that the Phoenix you know today ain't nothing like the Phoenix when I was a kid. In a lot of ways, I guess that's a good thing. Okay, one of the other things that's great about Phoenix today is this website, because you can get the latest in sports on a variety of levels locally, including one of the big things now as we head into February, recruiting for college football. Which high school stars in the state are going where? Well, you'll know the latest when you just check in here periodically, or let's make that daily, the sports360az.com. Hey, I appreciate you letting me ramble, and I will update this again soon. Thanks for checking us out.